Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you today.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Well, very good. There is a shift in foreign policy. I think it's foreign policy they're dealing with. Who knows what they're up to? But all of a sudden, now it looks like we're leaning toward being friends with Russia again, or at least not being so hostile toward Russia. One time, it started off, it looked like things were going to get much better, then they were going to get much worse. But right now, they say we're not going to put any sanctions on Russia for now. Maybe later we'll hold back on it. We have our plans for them later. But we got to get those Iranians. They're the bad guys, and we got to put sanctions on them. All of a sudden, overnight, a big switch. Of course, we heard Tillerson a couple weeks ago give a little talk about it. He sent out the warning. Well, you know where the target's going to be. I thought there for a while it might only be North Korea, but that's still on the front burner, too. But right now, today, this week, it's get those Iranians, put on sanctions, let's punish them. Why do you think they flip-flop? If you know the answer to that, you know a lot of people are going to be hanging in there to hear why is this administration flip-flop all over the place and how are we going to figure them out?
I mean, doesn't it seem like such a superficiality and a lack of strategic thinking on the part of U.S. foreign policy? As you point out, just a couple of days ago, we were all holding our breaths waiting for an attack on North Korea. Then yesterday, President Trump said he'd be honored to sit down with Kim Jong-un and have a talk. Russia was the enemy, and now it turns out that, at least according to what we've seen in Politico in the past day or so, that Senator Corker, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman, said they're pulling language out of a bill that contains more sanctions on Russia, and that was designed to be in retaliation for Russia's meddling in our elections. They're going to leave that part out, and they're going to put something else in we can talk about a little later. But the real enemy, as you pointed out, is Iran.
Right. And we of course, wonder, well, how did they become such great enemies? You know, why were they a great enemy in 1953 when we thought that we had to go in and change their government, which has really played an important role in our relationship with Iran ever since then? And, of course, back then it had to do with oil, who had the oil, and they had an elected leader, and things weren't that bad in Iran, and things had been made worse over these years. But then again, after this elicited, a radical Islamic movement that finally took charge and got rid of our puppet dictator, the Shah, I mean, we've had sanctions on them. And the last administration, finally got around to thinking, well, maybe it's time that we change our policy. And we, of course, confiscated a lot of money from the Iranians. And people who were shocked because we had the audacity to give back some of the money that
some
we took from
money.
It. Oh, that's coming out of the American Treasury. So Obama got a lot of grief over that, but he was returning the money. Whether or not the negotiations were above board, that's a different story. But on again, off again, and then there's this treaty that several nations agreed to, and they were backing off from their nukes. And so far, there's no evidence that they've really broken that agreement. I think our own government, I think Tillerson recognized that they have not. And yet, we're going this next step and say, oh, these people are the bad guys. And anytime we go out of our way to help the Iranians, we're involved in an ancient war. And that is between Iran and Shia against Sunnis, Saudi Arabia. And that's a big battle going on. So, what do we blame? What do we say that the Iranians are so bad about? Well, they support terrorism. They've been testing missiles, and they don't follow human rights. Of course, they allow Christians to go to church on Easter and a few other things. So, who do we support? Oh, we support those wonderful people in Saudi Arabia, and we thought they were so great that we put them ahead of the Human Rights Committee for Women. And of course, it's the only country in the world where women aren't allowed to drive, and Christians may lose their life in Saudi Arabia. So this makes no sense. It just goes through, and people are to believe that the real enemy of the world are the Iranians, and the friends of the world and peace will be the Saudis, and that's why we have to help them slaughter the people in Yemen.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone just stopped and thought about it for a second, it wouldn't pass the laugh test. But the precipitating factor for the new Iranian sanctions are According to the U.S. side of the joint agreement, the Iran deal, the White House has to report to Congress every 90 days as to whether Iran is living up to its obligations. And so Secretary Tillerson last month sent the obligatory letter to Congress, and he verified that Iran was in compliance with the nuclear deal. So, you know, that's simply a fact. But then he said Iran is accused, he accused Iran of alarming ongoing provocations to destabilize countries in the Middle East. Thankfully, we don't do that.
No. You know,
Libya, overthrowing Syria.
I'd be so embarrassed.
But here's what Trump, President Trump said then, because they couldn't get him on violating the agreement. They said, well, they're violating the spirit of the agreement, which is some sort of amorphous thing. What does that mean? There are no spirits in the room when they sign the agreement, but it's just a way of being able to justify.
What about an agreement that says that, well, we don't want you testing missiles, but we won't ever test a missile again, and we won't ever test a big bomb to see if it'll go off and what damage will be done, and we're not going to test any of that. It's the hypocrisy that is so bad and really is so embarrassing and so disappointing, because, you know, it seems like if we're looking for the truth, our biggest job is criticizing our own government policies, and that's not much fun. But literally, that is where the trouble is. It's this aggressive, warmongering, policy of empire. Guess who loves this type of thing? McCain, Graham, Rubio. Rubio says it's not tough enough. Well, yeah, we should do this with the Iranians, but don't give an inch, you know, to the Russians. We need to do something more. And back to the Russian thing, remember I mentioned yesterday of this new program, $100 million that they got through, Republicans and Democrats, bipartisan, $100 million new program to thwart any influence the Russians have on Europe. You know, like the Russians have their tanks lined up and they're going to march to Berlin. You know, they're still fighting the Soviet system, you know. Yeah. But that whole program is disturbing because nobody's really mentioned it, and it sort of slipped through in the budget.
Yeah, it's snuck into the omnibus that they're going to be taking up next week. But, you know, speaking of Rubio, and talk about superficiality. Here's the quote that he's hanging his head. He's so sad that they took the sanctions out. He said, quote, "I think any time is a good time for Russia sanctions."
Any time.
It just shows what a...
We don't like them.
But this $100 million fund is interesting because in some ways it's something very, very old that we've been doing on and on and on. We've done it through the National Endowment for Democracy. We've done it through USAID. Essentially what we're doing is what we've accused the Russians of doing, which is we are going to meddle in the electoral processes of European countries. And I can read you the language of the bill that's being spliced onto the omnibus, the relevant section, and explain it. Not less than, so it's not 100 million, it's not less than 100 million. So it can go up.
Yeah,
not less than 100 million shall be made available for assistance to counter Russian influence and aggression in countries in Europe and Eurasia. Such funds shall be referred to as the Countering Russian Influence Fund and be made available to civil society organizations and other entities in such countries for rule of law, media, cyber, and other programs that strengthen democratic institutions and processes and counter Russian influence. You know what that means in practice? It means if there's any political parties that rise up in any of these countries that question the sanctions, that question the economic damages, and I think you've got some information on that later, that question these and say we need to rethink this whole thing, the U.S. will use this money to undermine these political parties. They'll use it to prop up media that attacks these parties. We're undermining democracy in these countries with this fund, and we've been doing it all along.
And it sounds fascist to me because they're going to deal with private organization. It sounds like expanding our spying operation, and that's that money for going to be used for that. And it's disgraceful that you can't spend less than $100 million. You have to spend it. And if you spend it, that means you didn't have enough and they'll give them more next go around. But, you know, the one thing that is ignored is what kind of a damage it does to ourselves. Because maybe most people think we're so strong we can do what we want and it'll only help us. But... you know, one time, long time ago, I did a speech and picked up certain items and said, we're a bunch of masochists.
Yeah.
What we do is it always hurts us more than it hurts them. And you could argue it's pretty hard to have hurt ourselves more than we hurt the Iraqis. But we hurt ourselves a lot. We were destructive to ourselves by getting involved in these wars. But there was a recent report and study on the harm done by the sanctions on Iran in recent times. Between 95 and 2013, there was a $175 billion loss in trade. And it could be 50, 60,000 jobs lost because of things that we couldn't sell to those very bad people over there. We need that money to send weapons to the Saudis, something like that. But there it is. It's job losses. And I was amazed at these figures, $175 billion loss, $50,000. And guess what? This assessment said that the penalty, the suffering from these type of sanctions could have been twice as big on Europe. But they're just bullheaded, blindsided. And once they get this, they're locked in on this. They become obsessed with it, no matter how much it hurts the American people.
And the U.S. government has admitted that Iran is not a threat to the United States. It doesn't take any actions or any terrorist acts against the United States. It's countries in the region with which, as you pointed out earlier, they're in a struggle. They're in a struggle with Saudi Arabia, the Sunnis. They're in a struggle with Israel for regional power. And so they sponsor groups like Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance group, that fights against Israel and right now, as a matter of fact, is in Syria fighting against ISIS. So we know and have admitted that they're not a threat to the U.S., yet nevertheless, we have to destroy these tens of thousands of American jobs because of something that's going on thousands of miles away. I wish Americans would take that on board, especially those that are suffering to find a job, having a hard time making ends meet, that these foreign policy is destroying our economy.
See, these are indirect, but they're painful. But what about the direct effect of the money we spend? You know, we don't have money in the bank. We don't have enough money. That's what this budget argument is all about. Where are we going to get the revenue? Are we going to raise taxes without cutting spending? This sort of thing. Well, we still have a strong dollar. We can print the money that we need. But they're starting to realize that this is not endless. So that's a pain, and pain and suffering for the people. Borrowed money means you're just delaying the payment. If you print the money, that means you're going to undermine the monetary system. And like I've said so many times, when you destroy a currency, you destroy the middle class. And that's the big beef. That's the big beef. And they say, oh, well, that's the tax code. We just need to tax the rich more. Of course, the rich are benefit from the monetary system, not because they don't pay enough taxes, because percentage-wise, they still pay a lot of taxes. But they get so many benefits from the monetary system and through the appropriation system and through the military industrial machine, all this, there's those benefits. So all this is a cost. And then, but there's a direct relationship to the more sanctions that we put on, it backfires and hurts our job. But besides that, nobody really would want to deal with this issue of sanctions from a moral basis. They're bad people. Yeah, you decided that the Iranians are bad people, so we have to do something, and they go and do this. But it is, I am convinced that it is equivalent to war. Because, if you do have a war break out between two countries, one of the most important thing you do is have a navy and blockade them, keep them from getting natural resources or the things that they need. So when we do this, we've actually declared war against Iran in 1953, and we haven't, done much better since that time. And here we are back again. Once there's a breakthrough, and we're talking to them, we're starting to trade with them again. It's sort of like, it's not working with Cuba. We don't want to talk to them anymore, so let's go back to tougher sanctions on Cuba. That's about what's equivalent with what we're doing with the Iranians. And it just makes no sense. It's almost like they're mentally ill and they're masochistic and they want to self-destruct us as a nation. And there are a lot of people suffering from it, but it's not sustainable. And that's why there's so much political turmoil and economic uncertainty, is because what we're doing is unsustainable, and it is represented by policies like this. And we eventually have to wake up before we have to do what we did in the 1960s and the early 70s, turn tail and run and leave Vietnam. There'll be a day when we'll do that and we will come home because we can't afford it. But it would make so much sense to do this before we destroy more and more lives and productivity and the complications that come when you destroy an economy and a monetary system that is limping along.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, you know, as you point out, the Europeans suffer twice as much on these sanctions in terms of their economy. They've had a pretty stagnant economy for a long time. You look at places like Greece trying to do another deal now, more austerity. Right. They've got tons of problems. It makes you wonder, why aren't there political entities that will rise in Europe to challenge this? And it makes you wonder and go back to this money, because I'm sure there's already money like this that's being spent to influence European politics, being people like Macron up in France, who is in favor of the status quo, or keep Merkel in office. Who knows what kind of meddling is going
on? Yeah, and you don't know whether it's deliberate because people want a different situation around the world, or whether they just take advantage of it. And I'm thinking about the cultural Marxists. You know, because of the wars and the destruction that we have created in the Middle East, we have massive migration of millions of people, and it's going to continue. And you have governments coming out and praising it. Just look at in our own country, you know, this whole idea that you have to bend over and do whatever they want. You can't even have a sanctuary city and say, we're not going to give you any money, which they shouldn't have had any in the first place. So this problem seems to satisfy the people who would like to see a different system of Marxism in the social sense, at least. And it seems like they're quite pleased with this. Maybe they're just taking advantage of a messy situation. Then you have to think about some others who are very, very wealthy. We used to think Marxism was designed to help poor people. But now it's very clear that the far left, very, very wealthy, probably tied into the big money even more than Republicans, or at least they're all tied into it, and they just continue to the same thing, and the mess that we have at our university is unbelievable, and it's all tied in. But most of this can be looked at when you look at, you know, monetary policy, economic policy, the principles of liberty, what our government is supposed to do, what our foreign policy is, and then it all seems together. But there's certainly a lot of people taking advantage of the situation, but I can't see who the beneficiaries are, because even those who have the money and orchestrate this stuff, how much more money do they need? You know, if you have billions of dollars, it doesn't satisfy them. They still get involved in this control, and I give them, you know, I try to give them a slight excuse, and that is, well, people don't know how to take care of themselves, and they don't have medical care, and they need us, the elitists. Mm-hmm. We are, Americans are elite, and that's why we're exceptional. This is a moral obligation we have. Same way with the domestic stuff. You know, we have this moral obligation. Governments, people will not take care of themselves. They'll have nothing unless we take care of them. And they, you know, they're the elites here at home, and we're living with that. And there's this rejection and loss of confidence, loss of understanding of what the founders tried to explain to us, what liberty was all about. I don't think liberty is dead. I think it's alive and well. But I think the disconnect is there, and I think the average person still, is so desperately in need that, well, what else can I do? I have to have the government take care of me. I've been so dependent on it. In the same way on this foreign policy, you know, it's a mess. What are we going to do? Well, sanctions. Yeah, that'll really help.
Yeah, that is the real disconnect. You know, there's no strategic thinking about America's place in the world. There's no new thinking, as you point out, new sanctions, new undermining, propping up NGOs to undermine people we don't like overseas. It's the same old thing. There's no strategic thinking. And really, I think that's what's behind our title for the show, Enemy of the Week. We thought it was going to be North Korea, but no, it's shifted, and now it's Iran. What's next?
There you go. I want to thank the audience for tuning in today, and we are delighted with how things are going with our program. But we're not so excited about how things are going in Washington. We believe that authoritarianism is alive and well. And one thing for sure, it's bipartisan. The authoritarians are all over the place. That's how you get to be top dog in Washington. The tougher you are and the more you can accommodate the demands of the people who want stuff for free and want control and want power and money, the more you'll move up in the establishment. But so far, we hear a little bit of noise, but we don't see much in the way of answers. And this demonstration today that we talk about on shifting around from day to day, if not minute to minute, that our policies are changing, that we have just reason to be concerned. But like I've said so many times, it's not that difficult to understand. If we believe and understand what liberty is all about, the solutions are out there. We just need a few more people speaking out for that cause. And when that time comes, which I believe it will, we can renew and restore the movement toward greater liberty as was intended by the founders of this country. Unfortunately, we've had a setback, probably the last 100 years, but we need to now usher in another 100 years where we make progress in understanding what the cause of liberty is all about. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.